Hey, everybody.
Hey, everyone.
This is Zach.
And this is Stuart.
Oh, right. Listen to that lead in.
Yeah. Yeah, that was classic. Classic Zach Stuart lead in.
It's like we've
been recording this before.
We're going to be talking. Do what?
Mm. Continue. This is classic Stuart interrupting Zach. I feel like you can never get your, like, intro in because I'm like, talk about random stuff. And you're like, okay, all right, Stuart. All right. I got to actually introduce this actual, you know, podcast episode.
Exactly.
Which is?
Hank Green's sequel to our previous book club. So this one is A Beautifully Foolish Endeavor.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to our previous cast, turn this off, go to the other episode, listen to that, then turn that off, then come back and turn this one on, and then when this one's done, you can turn this off. And then go and do whatever you want to do, because I'm not the boss of you.
Yeah, this one was really interesting.
It was.
I'll do some backstory on it, because this one, and it's actually really well regarded. I don't know how Bookmarks does it. My understanding is that it's the Metacritic equivalent for books.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit more well received than the first one, which, spoilers, I don't agree with.
I don't either. So this has 60% rave, 20% positive, and 20% mixed reviews on Bookmarks. Mm. I don't, like you said, I don't know if I agree with that.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad book, but I actually like the first book a little bit better. Because
and to be clear, this is the final installment to the Carl saga.
Yeah, though they do leave it kind of open-ended.
They do. So I think a lot of the good reviews are the Green Brothers fan base kind of, you know, thumbing the scale, so to speak, a little bit on public forums and
but again, whatnot. I think it's good. I think this book is good. I just don't. A lot of the things that I kind of praised the first book on, they didn't have that in this.
Exactly.
Book. There was a lot less push on, like, social media, like, you know, this mystery and everything like that. And it more became kind of a bit of a heist, and
yeah, it was way more heisty than I had originally anticipated.
Of, like, getting the gang back together, and then, you know, once we've got the gang back together, like, go and figure out Alice, and, like, you know, I enjoyed, like, the mysteriousness of Carl, but then, like, when the curtain was pulled away. And, you know, the description of Carl of being like, oh, yeah, I'm this particular organism. I like, it was cool that there's, like, multiple Carls and they refer to them as they. And, you know, that they can be in, like, multiple places. But it was very much like, oh, you know, I don't know who my creator was. But, like, I'm supposed to be here to, like, you know, intervene from you guys destroying yourselves. It's like,
right.
I don't know. It takes a little bit of the mysteriousness away. This is going to be a tangent, and please forgive me for this, especially you, Zach, but, like, it's very much like the Willy Wonka movie. I don't need a Willy Wonka movie. I like the mysteriousness of Willy Wonka. Is he a child murderer? Is he, like, a crazy philanthropist? Is he just, like, some dude who was like, I'm going to make a bunch of chocolates. Like, I don't want to know about Willy Wonka's, like, tragic backstory. I don't want to know about, like, his family and how he found the Oompa Loompas. I want to know, like, I like that kind of era of, like, that mysteriousness of, like, does he not care about, like, these children dying? Is he that, like, jaded in his life? Like,
well,
it's very much so, like, I like, you know, I like that mysteriousness, and like, I don't want that Kern to be pulled back from this character of Willy Wonka, who's very like, you know, shrouded in mysteries, and being like, oh well, yeah, you know, he had like, you know, his mother may have died, and he, that triggered him, and then he like saved a Oompa Loompa, and they decided his to like. His
father was Christopher Lee, yeah. And told him he could never have candy.
Yeah, yeah, and then you know he met like a bunch of Oompa Loompas who were like, "We'll work for you for free," and then he became like that's the king of around. Oompa Loompas, or you know, I don't know what's going to be, but it's like, I don't know if I'm just being an old curmudgeon, but like, I like kind of that era of like, you know, Willy Wonka, and to tie it back to this book,
yeah.
I kind of like that era of like, I don't know who the Carls, like what they are, but then it was very much like, oh yeah, I'm this organism that like fed off a bunch of like, you know, fungus organisms and became super smart, and now I'm trying to like help you all out because like, I've got a brother who's like doing nasty things, and it's just like, I don't know. It became kind of like, I don't know. Like, you learn how to make the sausage, and you're like, well. Oh, also, a callback from the previous episode, Stuart's secret sauce is made 50% of love, 20% water, 5% sugar, and then 10% unknown subject or unknown entity.
Material.
Yeah, that probably comes from Stuart. There we go.
Stuart juice.
There's that callback. but yeah, I didn't like, you know, and there was like, so the thing that kind of was interesting was like kind of the VR, like the augmented reality.
The dream replacement?
Yeah, which I, you know, yeah. That's very much like Pokemon Go. I'm like, I can totally see that and everything,
hey,
like
AR
that.
AR is like so up your alley in like every instance.
Yeah. And I was like, that's super cool and everything like that. But then it was like, oh, well, we also replaced April's like body with like this kick-ass like robotic body that, you know, can like punch down the door and shit like that. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean,
yeah. I'll push back a little bit with I much prefer the first one to this one.
Yeah. So we're in agreement with that.
I think if they had kept it as a mystery, though, there wouldn't be a need for a sequel. Like,
yeah.
I think he changed the type of story it is, because if he just did the same thing over again, it's like, well, you've done this already.
Yeah, you have to change it somewhat up. Yeah.
Now, what I will say is, as much as I liked the first one,
mm-hmm.
and it was written in the exact same style as this one, in this one, I really do not like the fact that he stuck with first person.
Oh, and how he's jumping from different people's like perspectives.
Well, and that's part of the problem is that, like, so because there's multiple people who act as narrators,
mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that, and I think I said this last time, the other reason that I don't like first person in any book that I read is that it has to be done extremely well.
Yeah.
Differentiating which character is like narrating.
Yeah.
Where's the focus?
Because they do that a lot, like, especially in like Brandon Sanderson's books, as well as like Robert Jordan's books. There's a lot where a chapter is dedicated to a character and it's in first person. And
well, like,
yeah, you really have to differentiate between those characters.
Yeah. Like George Martin and, Robert Jordan are fantastic at doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's other authors. Those are the two that come to mind as being very skilled at doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's their whole gimmick. I had a lot of trouble unless I was starting at the very beginning of a section with a character, if I like put the bookmark in the middle of the chapter or whatever.
You're like, which character is this?
Yeah, I had real trouble reading the voice of Maya versus Andy's voice versus Miranda's voice.
Yeah.
They all sound pretty much the same.
Yeah. They all have this like snarky attitude of like,
and it's like, if you're going to, and yeah, like, I guess what, if it were me, what I would have done, and maybe his editor advised him against this, maybe, I don't know, but if it were me, I would have the sections up until her return mm-hmm. be third person.
Yeah.
And then with the return, go back to first person just for that character.
Yeah.
Like,
and just have her, like, it's
so difficult to keep them differentiated in my head, just reading the voice. Like, they all sound the
they
same.
They all, yeah.
Like, well, in third person, they don't. Like, Maya sounds different than Andy, that sounds different from Miranda, that sounds different from Robin. Like, they all have their own voice when it's third person.
Yeah, but, like,
when in the first one, April was recounting.
Yeah, and I think it's also because, like, their internal monologue or their internal dialogue with, like, within themselves is mm-hmm. always this kind of, like, snappy, snarky sort of, like...
Yeah,
and it,
which isn't the voice for all of Maya and Miranda, especially. I don't think.
Yeah,
like that.
I was very surprised about Mariah, with her being like the more scientific one. I mean, there were sections where she was very much like, you know, I keep on using this word, but like snarky and stuff. So, but
yeah, like you would think that. I don't know. You would think a trust fund kid would sound different from...
No, well, that's Maya. Maya was trust fund.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you would think a trust fund kid's internal narrative would work a little bit different than someone who is, like, a PhD candidate
yeah.
in science.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have different life experiences. Like, just... Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're going to have different life experiences. Andy is certainly going to have a different experience being the only guy in this group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was just, it was interesting, like, them trying to solve the mystery of, like, or not mystery, but there was sort of, like, that kind of sleuthing at the half of the book where they were trying to figure out, like, what happened to April, you know, what to do next, which was kind of cool. And then that, like, book of good, what was it called? It was book of... It was the psychic book. It was the book that, like, you know, was talking to them. The Book of Good Times.
The Book of Good Times, yeah.
And it's just, like, what did you think of that, like, ex machina, sort of?
I kind of liked the sections, but... The thing that kind of ground my gears when there was all of the characters to a person when they interacted with that book. Like when, for instance, when Andy asks out the girl.
At the subway.
Yeah, they're all of them to a person are like, I wonder who this is communicating with me. It's like, I don't know, Genius. Who do you think it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you just had this huge galaxy-spanning, life-changing experience not 6 weeks ago.
It's Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is talking to you from the multiverse. Yeah. Yeah. Now, so that, yeah, was kind of, I don't know. But, like...
No, it's still fun. Like,
it was fun,
basically,
yeah.
It's, I mean, I was definitely surprised at some points, not necessarily in a good way, because I was just like, oh, I don't know if I would have made that decision for this story, but okay.
Like what?
Like with April coming back.
Oh, yeah? You would have left her...
I would have... Yeah, yeah. I would have just moved on mm-hmm. from there. Like, I don't know. And I don't like it when movies do that. Like, because it robs that scene or that work of that emotional impact
yeah.
if you're like you know, oh, this is a tragedy, this person is gone, this person is no longer there, and then it's like, just kidding,
JK, yeah,
now they're better, and it's like,
I will say...
Well, okay, now I feel like the rug has been pulled out from under me, and I don't like that.
Yeah, like, can I believe anything else that I read? Like, will it just be, like...
Like, why should I care about whatever their problem is in this story, then?
I'll say it's interesting, though. I think they did a good description, or Hank Green did a good description on, like, the body... I guess the body horror of, like, having your body...
I did like that. Yeah.
Replace, like... You know, like, half of your face and stuff like that. And it's very interesting because, like, you know, again, in that first person, I think it works really well with April, where, like, even the book, it's, like, feel your face. Like, in one of the chapters, it's, like, touch your face. Like, you're very used to the way that your face feels and stuff like that. So I thought that was, like, a good, like, image and everything. And again, that, like, first person works...
Yeah, having that kind of dysmorphia with, what has changed at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, with her, like, using her looks a lot for, like, you know, her online presence and everything. I thought that was very interesting. And, again, I really like that kind of, like, that voice with her. But then, like, you know, when you get voices with, like... the other characters in the group and everything like that, they are also very much just, like, very samey, and, like, I don't think it works for their characters. But, but I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed, like, going on the ride. What do you think about Peter?
Oh, go ahead.
I was just wondering what your feelings on was with, like, Peter, like, the main antagonist and everything. Who was doing the Atlas stuff?
Yeah, He's very frustrating because he... Like, I know... Or, well, maybe Hank Green is not intending him to be this person.
Oh, I feel like he is, because I think we're on the same page of, like, what kind of person he is.
I think that he's trying to make him into, like, a Ben Shapiro-type character. Yeah. And it's like... I don't know, man. Like, I can't feel any bit of sympathy for any bad thing that happens to that guy in real life. So the fact that I'm reading all of this stuff happening to him in the story, like, I could give
zero fucks. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Hank does try to write him in, like, a redeeming factor at the very end, but it's just like, I'm sorry.
With that whole approach of, like, well, we need to humanize our antagonists. And it's like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with empathy.
This bitch was trying to, like, get a hit on Maya.
But, yeah, exactly. It's like, no, there are some things that people do and say that are 100% irredeemable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 100% in the boat of...
If you're trying to get somebody to, you know... kill somebody.
Yeah, like...
You're not a good person.
I don't care how much remorse they show. Yeah, no, there are consequences to that.
They weren't showing remorse when they were putting the hit out.
Yeah, yeah, no, there was no remorse there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what, well, I and?
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, like, it's yeah, it's like the frustration I see whenever you see, like, middle of the road, like, liberal politicians or whatever, like, saying, yeah, we need to show empathy with these people and maybe convince them to join our side or whatever. And it's like, no, they're not there.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing with the, they're indoctrinated.
Yeah.
And they've been radicalized and they will never not be the thing that they are. Yeah,
they will lie to you.
Indoctrinated.
They will lie to you to, like, gain your trust and everything. Yeah. But,
and I mean, I'm not saying that people can't be redeemed, because, like, there's stories of people who, like, you know, were in a certain mindset or whatever, and, like, you see, like, tattoo shops do, like, look, we'll do free cover-ups for like hate symbols and stuff.
Oh,
and
that's awesome. Tattooed. I didn't know that.
It's like that happens with such infrequency, as far as I'm aware, that it's like, okay, great. Like, 10 people are no longer tattooing hate symbols on themselves.
But at least that's...
Thumbs up, I guess. But, like, what about the thousands of people that are getting radicalized otherwise through, like, media things, you know?
But at least that's 10 less people.
Do I?
I said at least that's 10 less people, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess. That's just... I don't know. To me, it doesn't feel like a big enough dent.
Mm.
So, I don't know. It's hard for me to want to empathize with someone like Peter Petrovicki in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is hard to sort of like see his redeeming factors, especially towards the end of the book.
I liked Andy's story, if I'm being completely honest, where he's just like taking these notes of like, okay, I don't know why I'm buying all the stocks,
yeah,
random stock, but okay.
Yeah, where it's very much like, but you know, truthfully, God, if I had like somebody telling me the like what actions I needed to take, I feel like that would kind of take a weight off of my shoulders, where like I'm not responsible anymore. I'm like, well, I'm just following this book, you know, putting my money.
And I like the. Well, I like the bit where, like, Miranda has decided that she's going to go undercover to, like...
Yeah, like, into the...
spy on Altus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's funny when the book's like, hey, we can't tell you anything, but when Miranda calls, you should just tell her yes.
Yeah.
And so when she calls Andy to say, what do you think about me doing this? In his head, he's like, this is the shittiest fucking idea. Do not do this. But he's just like... Yeah, you should apply for
that. Yeah, where he's just kind of like following the book.
Well, I've been proven, you know, right in trusting this thing so far, so I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how he
do it now.
He meets his the person that he ends up like being with at the very end of the book.
Yeah.
So
Maya's story is kind of interesting. I guess she's kind of the character that gets us back with April.
Yeah.
Where
she's the one kind of doing like a lot of the sleuthing, where she's decided to take it on herself to like, you know, investigate these like power outage, to investigate these like weird migration of animals and stuff. And that's what leads her to that one particular like flea mart where she finds the stones, and where she eventually ends up meeting up with April once April decides to break on out.
Yeah.
I feel like, and again, like I like this book. I want to keep on prefacing where this was an enjoyable book.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm shitting on this book.
Yeah. I enjoyed this book. You know, it was very much, I was happy to get back into the world. I was happy to, like, meet these people, sort of to see where their story was going. Some of that, like, mysteriousness and the mystique from Carl went away, but it was good nonetheless to sort of, like, see April and, you know, have the gang back together and everything. It's just... I feel like the first book was a little bit more interesting to me with the themes, with the ideas and stuff like that. And I feel like, you know, the first book established all that stuff. And then this book just kind of like plays off of those ideas. There wasn't like any sort of interesting new concept besides like the introduction of like Atlas and the introduction of Carl and everything like that. There wasn't, it felt more sci-fi than grounded in reality than the first book. And, like, I enjoy sci-fi. I enjoy grounded reality. I feel like Hank's probably his stronger suit is, and I think this is because he, like, knows it better, is kind of, like, grounded in reality where, you know, and... It is interesting. There was this sidebar with Andy about that that podcast where he was trying, or that YouTube video or group or something.
Yeah, Slain Spotting.
Yeah, yeah. Where I thought that was, you know, it was kind of interesting where, like, he was trying to get into this group, and this group had, like, these demands of, like, money and stuff, and how it was multiple people with, like, multiple, like, I guess, like, fields that they specialized in, so they could, like, have this channel. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, this could be a thing. This could, like, I could see this, you know, in 2023's world right here, where there was, like, a big organization with a lot of people who were specialized in things, and they made very, like, centralized, like, music, or not music, but centralized videos. I mean, and
that's
stuff.
That's kind of what Anonymous purported to be.
Yeah.
Right.
But more in, like, a entertaining sort of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. This book to me is one that I don't think I'll reread. Like, whereas I would like. I have reread the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm good on this one, like, because both of them end in cliffhangers, but the cliffhanger that the first one ends on is one where it's just like, I don't know, continual, like, where do you think it goes, right?
Yeah.
With this one, it's technically a cliffhanger, but it's the same cliffhanger that, like, Arthur C. Clarke put in 2010, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, all these planets are yours. Just stay the fuck out of this one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Where it's like, well, I feel like you kind of write it in a way of like, you know, maybe I'll come back to this universe and like do more.
And that's one of the things is that he has said since like in the past couple of years, right? Really, just because he constantly gets like. Questions about like, hey, can we get a follow-up to this? Like, he has been pretty adamant about like, no, I wrote what I wrote, and that's what I wrote. That's it. That's like,
and you know,
I'm not writing anymore.
And that's, you know, that's admirable, because like, yeah. Some people just write for a paycheck, but you know, come 10 years we'll see if that still holds strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's one of the thing. It like it shows a level of integrity of like, yeah, I know. Like I've told the story.
Yeah.
Like if I do anything else, it's no longer the story that I want to tell.
Yeah.
I've told that.
Yeah. Where people want to come back and write about like Willy Wonka, how he grew into this particular candy.
Side note, I feel like it's funny. Studio executives think we give a shit about where Willy Wonka comes from. All we cared about was Gene Wilder playing
Willy Wonka. Yeah, I mean, Gene like, Wilder will always be my Willy Wonka. And like, yeah, Gene Wilder is such a weirdo too when he plays that. Like, even Dali when he or yeah, Dali wrote Willy Wonka, right?
Dahl,
yeah.
Roald Dahl, yeah.
Yeah, Roald Dahl. I mean, even the book, you know, Willy Wonka's a big old weirdo. Like, mm-hmm. You don't know if he's, like, taking enjoyment of, like, watching these kids suffer and, like, you know, being okay if, like, one of the kids die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Sorry. To jump on that tangent, yeah, like, just stop trying to make prequel sequels to Willy Wonka. Just stop it.
But money, you gotta have that money, and people...
But will it, though? Like, if...
Will it? I don't know.
If they make... Like, this is the thing that I was having a discussion with someone about the other day, where, like, you keep seeing that, you know, all these summer blockbusters keep coming out, and they're like, yeah, we only made $142 million, and it's like... Yeah, I mean, that would be great if you didn't spend $300 million on the movie and then $600 million in marketing.
Yeah.
You know, like, how about you take a chance? Why don't you make 30 $10 million movies? Surely amongst 30, not all of them will lose money.
Yeah, well, you gotta have writers to, like, come up with actual ideas, so.
Yeah, and spoilers for whenever this comes out. Yeah, right now the writers and the actors are striking at the same time for the exact same reasons. Related reasons. The last time this happened was like 60 or 70 years ago, and it's why the Writers Guild and the Actors Guilds, actors and writers, get residuals on things.
Yeah. I mean,
so, like, this is a historic thing going on.
It is.
Hopefully, it's resolved by the time this comes out.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, it's so strange, like, with AI and, with, like, you know, having this ability to write stories and stuff like that. People were worried about, like, their whole writing career and everything. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Well, it's, you know, it's funny. AI, and I, well, I mean, this is kind of related to the book.
Yeah, like, because there was...
You could argue that AI is, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, AI is basically a powerful version of the predictive text that's on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Exactly.
Like, it contextualizes at a much more rapid rate, and so it gives the impression of intelligence, but it's not like it's not generating that on its own.
Yeah, it's not coming up with its own ideas.
The thing about AI, though, that, like, everyone's so freaked out about it, and it's like, and I don't know, maybe there's an answer to this that I am unaware of, because, again, I am not a future technologist, but from everything that I've been reading, you can only, like, the AI models that they have out, like the ChatGPTs and the Midjourneys and all that stuff, they can really only have it pull from stuff up until about 2021 when they first started doing things.
Oh.
Because anytime past 2021... they start getting corrupted by the other AI-generated bullshit that they're scraping from online, and so they make themselves dumber at an exponential rate.
Yeah, that's funny.
And less useful. So it's like it's frozen in time when it can, like, actually work as it was intended to work generally.
Well, I'm sure.
So it's like, I don't know, if you can't move past a certain year because you keep fucking it up when you keep putting it back in the machine, maybe that means the machine is no good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to be worried when, like, an AI can come up with, like, an original idea that it didn't, like, scrape or anything. I'll be like, all right, I'm done.
I don't know if that's even...
I don't think so. I don't think in our life or even in, like, you know, hundreds of years. But it'll be interesting. It's always interesting to sort of see.
There's little things to play around with, but there's certainly nothing that I would, like, use on an official product or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting just to sort of think about, like, where exactly would, like, will we be as a society within, like, hundreds of years? Are we going to be this, like, great technological, like, advanced race, or are we just going to be in basically the dark ages when we let all of the, like, computers and other things, like, take over? Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows? But it'd be interesting to, like, be able to sort of, like, live for that long. Hence my reason why I want to be an immortal vampire. When we had those, like, questions about, like, do you want to live forever? And I was like, yeah, I'll live forever. And you're like, nah.
No, it was the... I thought it was the opposite. Because, yeah, like, I would totally upload my consciousness into a...
No, it was more I would...
live forever?
Yeah, I would lock my, like, age in right now. And just, like, be...
Oh, yeah, if we're talking about, like, no longer aging or whatever, it's like, yeah, sure, I'll live forever. I just want a way out.
Okay, yeah. I don't think we said that there was a way.
Yeah.
I think it was, like, very much like, you know, after the Earth explodes, you'd just be kind of floating out there in space.
Yeah, that would be miserable. I would want to just be able to be like, okay, I think I'm fine with suffocation now. Thank you.
I don't know. I think I'd be all right. I'd just kind of float and find myself into another world, another crazy universe.
But you would go mad with hunger.
But I'm living forever, so I don't need to eat.
Yeah, but just because you're not dying from it doesn't mean it's not unpleasant.
It's not unpleasant, yeah.
Unpleasant and painful.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the thing with Wolverine where, like, you know, his regenerative powers, like, he can functionally live forever.
Yeah.
But, like, when he, like, there...
But it hurts, yeah.
In modern run where, like, most, like, there's... I think it's the arc that, like, Joss Whedon wrote for the comic line where they're going to Battleworld and they crash land on this planet from atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, been exposed to atmosphere and his, like, most of his flesh is gone and most of his uniform is gone because it's been burned away.
Yeah.
And the person that was with him that is fine is like, hey, can we go? He's like, I'm going to need like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, just to kind of
it's like, I regenerate. Gotta skin back.
Yeah.
Like, I can barely move. I'm going to sit on this rock and drink this beer while it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about movies. I'm actually looking forward to the Deadpool movie with Wolverine.
Yeah.
Did you see him in his... funky yellow suit
in the actual costume? Yeah. He should have had not that like weird like rent boy outfit that he had him in.
Yeah.
The first one is just like PVC vinyl.
Exactly. He looks good. I mean, shoot, I forget the actor's name, but the actor, like,
oh, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Hugh, yeah. Jackman looks real awesome.
You know, I was texting with Richard when that photo came out, because, you know, he's a huge Deadpool fan.
Yeah.
And a huge X-Men fan. And I was like, now, the thing that would just be the cherry on top of that image for me, mm-hmm. or for what they're doing in that movie for me, would be if, because, you know, Hugh Jackman in real life is like 6'3 or 6'4.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, Wolverine is like...
Yeah, like six, like five?
No.
Or not
no,
say a 5'5"? No, no, five, no. Five, or like...
No, he... Well, no, he's shorter than that because he... Like, I want to say he's like maybe 5 feet tall.
Really? I thought he was... I thought he was over 5 feet tall.
He's... Yeah, like in the comics, he's... like one of the original people that they were... When they were going to make the X-Men movie in like the early 90s... Mm-hmm. One of the people that they were going to have play X-Men or Wolverine was Bob Hoskins.
Yeah.
Because he's supposed to be just a short, like, runty plug of muscle.
Yeah, right? Of hair and muscle.
And so what I would love is if they digitally shrink Hugh Jackman so that, like, in the actual movie, he's, like, 5 feet tall.
Yeah, he's so much shorter than, like, Deadpool.
A foot and a half shorter than he normally is.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know... With Deadpool, like, he kind of, like, not towers over Deadpool, but, like, sits.
Yeah, they're, like, the same height, yeah. But, like, Deadpool's pretty tall and, like, ropey and lanky.
Yeah. So, but I didn't know that Wolverine was that short. I knew he was short, but I didn't think he was, like, 5 foot short.
Yeah, let me see. Let's see.
Yeah. Check your...
I think someone... Someone said that, like, I was reading online that he could actually apply for a handicap sticker because
he's that short. Yeah. My mom.
I don't know what the height cutoff for that is. Apparently, he is 5'3".
5'3"? Okay.
In current things.
Current things.
Yeah. So Hugh Jackman is a foot taller than him.
Yeah. Well, that's that's interesting. Good to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Wolverine is our short king.
Our short king, yeah. You get it, king. You get it. but I guess getting back to the book, what would you rate this book?
So, that was a smooth segue. I was going to be like, well, if we're talking about other things, we need to talk about the book or nothing at all.
Oh.
So that's a much smoother segue than mine. So I gave it the exact same score as the last one, which was B, because I liked this one not as much as the last one, but I liked it in different ways.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. That was my justification, at least.
Yeah, and I think I would give it the same score as my previous one.
B?
Yeah, B. I did like the first one a little bit better, but not by, like, that much of a margin. Yeah. It was still, you know, a nice book to read. I took this book on a vacation to the beach, so it was definitely that beach book where, you know, it didn't hook me into, like, where I was like, oh, I gotta continue reading to the next chapter to, like, sort of figure out what was happening. Like, you know, I read it, and then I was like, I'm getting kind of hot. I might go and swim out in the ocean. So I put it down, and I would swim out in the ocean, put some sunscreen on, sit back underneath the umbrella, and then pick the book back up. But there was never, like, a pressing need to be like, oh, this book has really, like, hooked me in, and, you know, I really want to, like, continue reading it. It was very much just kind of like a pleasant book. So yeah. Right. Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah, with that then, that'll do it for this episode.
Waha!
Our next book club is going to actually be on a series. We're just going to do one episode. but we're going to cover six books.
You're killing me, Zach.
It's the Codex Alera by Jim Butcher.
Zach. I know. Zach came over to my house. Zach came over to my house and, like, had a grocery bag of books. And he was like, here, Stuart. Here are all the books you need to read. I'm like, oh, no.
They move pretty quickly.
They do.
I don't know
they
if
do.
You started reading them.
They do.
But also, you have read them before.
I have read them, so I can kind of, like, skim through some of the stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do
when I just,
read them before. I still just do a, like, cursory.
Yeah, like, just to, like, pick up people's names and stuff like that. But yeah, it's going to be a lot to try to pack in six books in the normal time that we do, so maybe we can always break it up into, like, a multi-part.
Yeah, we can always do a multi-part if you want. Honestly, there's some of them that I'm going to be like, we just skip this. Like, I'm fine with even just doing a general, like, this is what happens in these books.
Okay, I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Like, I don't think we need to, like, be exhaustive because Jim Butcher's not that varied a type of writer.
Yeah. If you read one Jim Butcher book, you've read them all.
Yeah, and so, like, there are like, story arcs that happen, but, like, we don't have to break down each individual book.
Okay.
there's some of them that I would be like, did you really need this one?
Yeah. But you gotta talk about your cool Pokemon.
We'll get into it.
Yeah,
that episode.
Yeah.
But until then, so yeah, we're not gonna have book clubs for a while in the release because, you know, just so that we both have enough time to, like, get notes and stuff together on six different books.
Yep.
This will probably be the last one for the year.
Okay.
I'm thinking. Just based on the amount of time between now and when I have sketched out an idea of us recording, just generally based on our patterns.
Yeah, yeah. That works.
Is that the Codex Alera one will probably be the last one of the year.
Okay. So. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were telling me or you're telling the audience.
I was telling you. Okay. You're in the audience.
I was like, do I need to respond to this?
So we got some time. We've got several months between...
Yeah, well, we tried some new experimental stuff, so keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll still do nerd fights, though, so.
You can always count on the nerd fights.
We can always count on nerd fights. We love bullshitting about stupid things and then telling each other about what we
watched. That's the majority of my life right there.
Yep, that, same.
Yeah.
At least the happiest parts of it.
Yeah. Aw.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
See you on the flip-flop. Bye.